I'm sure that every person who's listening right now has had an argument at one time or another that seemed impossible to resolve. That's where someone like Dr. Marvin Johnson might come in handy. He's the founder and executive director of the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution, and he's among the speakers later today at the Association for Conflict Resolution. I'm very pleased he could join us now. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
I was surprised to learn that your Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution is the first of its kind to have been founded at a historically black university. Why, considering the racial tensions that sometimes plague this country, did it take so long for that to happen?
I'm not certain. I think that the approach people have taken was to force change. And in terms of using the legal avenues and or the ballot bots, though that wasn't really open early on. And so I think it was an avenue that was overlooked.
Well, why did you start it at your school? Were there serious problems arising?
Not when I started it. It's just that I wanted to do this work ever since high school. So I went to undergrad and graduate graduate schools to get degrees in the area where I knew you could become a mediator, and that was in the labor area. So that's what I studied in undergraduate and graduate school. I got a master's degree and then was looking for places to use it. Folks saying, you don't have any experience, you just have the book knowledge. And a colleague of mine who went to the University of Wisconsin that I did was teaching at that university and let me come in. And then when I got there, I said, how about conflict resolution? I created a course. And then how about having a center? And we went on from there.
Well, we usually think of mediators in terms of labor disputes, but you're suggesting that they can apply everywhere.
Absolutely. Well, if you think about it, wherever there's human beings, there's going to be conflict. So in any field, mediators, dispute resolution can occur, and that's what started to happen, and the field is just exploded.
You say that there was also a problem of a lack of diversity in mediation practitioners for a long time. So do people feel uncomfortable if they have a dispute and let's say they're in a non-majority group, Latinos, Asians, Muslims, Jews, whatever, if the mediator is someone who they feel won't really understand what they're all about?
That has been and still is a problem in terms of having mediators that look like the public and the community that's being served. And one of the things that we've done at our center, I think we've trained more diverse groups of people of color than any other place. But it is important for a person to see someone who looks like them. And sometimes folks who use co-mediation, which is two mediators, they try to pair people up for that particular reason.
Well, how far do we go with that? If there's a dispute in baseball, does the mediator have to have been a former player?
No.
That would suggest that he would have some kind of a bias, wouldn't it?
I don't think so. I think basically the parties typically get to choose. Mm-hmm. And when the parties select, they're going to select someone that they both believe that can resolve the dispute. And I think initially one would think that if a person know someone, that's conflict of interest, and we have a code of conduct that we should not have a conflict of interest. And if we do, we need to disclose it. And if the parties say that's okay, we still want you, then you move forward.
Now, you mentioned earlier that this is an area that you wanted to get into when you were fairly young. Had you always been adroit at diffusing arguments? Were you the oldest sibling in your family?
No, I'm the youngest, as a matter of fact.
Did that make you the peacemaker?
No. My older brother used to beat me up a lot when I was younger until I was old enough and strong enough to defend myself. I think it with my colleagues, with my friends at the time, looking back, I was the spoke of a wheel that kept a lot of people together. When I went away to college, and some of those, most of them went to school in the area. And when I came back, they hadn't talked to each other until I came back. And so I was the one that kept them together and resolved some of the differences between them.
So you kind of, they were waiting for you to come back?
Well, I don't know if they were waiting for me to come back.
Well, they just continued fighting?
Well, they didn't see each other. They went their own separate ways. And then I came back, and everybody came back together. It was a group of us, and we would go to parties, and we'd have fun, and we'd do things like that. So that's how, I mean, only looking back did I realize that. While it was going on, I didn't realize that was what happened.
What did you have to do to get people back together?
When I came home, I just picked up the phone, called them and said,
what
are you doing?
You think they were waiting for that call? I know I recently had a fight with a friend. We didn't talk for a while, and a long-term friend. And I finally thought, I miss that friend. And I got on the phone, even though I had felt at the time that he had been wrong. And I said, I miss you. We've been friends for a long time. He was so happy to hear that, to get that call. Otherwise, we just wouldn't have talked forever.
Well, when I went away, I never went away on bad terms. It's just that what happened is, I think things happened when I was gone, and what I had to do was repair the relationship between the group so that when we came together, we could continue on. But one thing you said I want to highlight, and that is something that we do as humans. When we have conflict, we tend to talk less when we should talk more. To get to the discussion that you finally had, you may not be immediate because sometimes emotions will get in the way, but we tend not to talk to the other party when sometimes it could be just a miscommunication, but because we don't talk to one another, it turns out to be more than what it is.
Are arguments just arguments, whether they're between neighbors or at the UN or in trying to deal with the current situation in Syria, for example?
Well,
I realize that the stakes are higher.
Right, but in the end,
is the process similar?
Somewhat. It's usually something that someone's trying to protect. Someone's trying to protect something that they love dearly, and so they're going to react in a way that protect that. And in the real simplest terms, conflict is an opposition that it's opposition that occurs when people perceive that their interest is being affected some way negatively. And so if you feel that, then you're going to behave in a certain way. And that's when you boil it really down, it's the simplest form.
Well, when you see a dispute unfolding before you, do you step in and try to help, or is it best to not interject yourself? You can get hurt that way, can't you?
Well, that's true. The answer is it depends. But if it's one thing, if it's an argument, you got one end of the scale where there's an argument, a verbal discussion, and the other end is you got physical violence on the other end of the scale. And obviously, where there's physical violence, you need to be careful before you step in because you could get hurt. Whereas discussion, you could step in there and try to help the parties, and you will not get hurt.
Well, there's a program called The Interrupters that began in Chicago. It was the subject of a film. Now it's moving to other cities. It stops mostly gang-related arguments from escalating, and the mediators are former gang members themselves, or the children of gang leaders. And in many of these disputes that escalated into violence, respect was at issue. Mm-hmm. He didn't respect me, and people were ready to kill for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that again, it's something that's important to that particular person. And when you feel threatened, that instance it's respect, then you're going to react in a certain way. And in a certain culture and environment, if reaction is to strike out, have violence, then that's the way they're going to react. In a different environment, it may not be. It might be to walk away and not, like you did, and not talk to the person for a long time. So in each culture, there's going to be a different response when someone's affected and they're trying to protect something that they hold dearly.
My guest is Dr. Marvin Johnson, founder and executive director of the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution, the first dispute resolution center founded at a historically black university. He's in town to be one of the speakers at the Association for Conflict Resolution meeting, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a little while. We'll be back right after this. We're back with Dr. Marvin Johnson, founder and executive director of the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution. So let's talk about how this whole process works. Do people actually come to you and say, we have this problem, we can't resolve it?
Typically, an organization, I work a lot of workplace or a county, someone would come and say, we've got this particular issue, can you help us? And I'll say yes. And then they'll ask, you know, what's your calendar like? And we get a date and we schedule a session.
And then they lay out both sides of the dispute.
Right. Typically, yeah, they identify, it could be a manager and an employee. It could be two managers. It could be like I'm getting ready to start one now where it's it's a group of employees and the manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are labor disputes.
Right.
Often disputes wind up going to court.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way of resolving them. Mm-hmm. So the courts wind up being the mediators there, or the jury in some cases.
Well, they're not necessarily so. That's more of a decision-making mode, and that's an arbitration where you take your dispute to a decider, and you get a decision from a judge or an arbitrator, whereas in mediation, we don't have the authority to tell the parties what to do. We try to work with them so that they can come up with their own solution.
But also in the legal system, there's a winner and a loser usually.
That's
it's my sense
exactly
that what
right.
you're involved with is they're both sides going away
right.
feeling like
right.
they got something out of it. Do you think too many cases wind up going to court or into those other kinds of settlement processes?
What helped the boom in mediation was when the court system adopted mediation, and there's court programs. And so what they saw is that their dockets were exploding, and so they developed mediation program to minimize the cases that actually go on to court.
Well, can you take us through a rather thorny dispute and show us step by step how you deal with people who are at each other's throats?
Well, the one that comes to mind is a woman who had trained a number of people who had gone on to bigger and better things, and she had filed a complaint. And
this sounds like the Lilly Ledbetter case.
Yeah. She had filed a complaint.
Hers went to court.
Yeah. Well, this one fortunately didn't go. And in fact, there was a class action starting, and the organization was afraid she was going to be a part of this class action. And so she tried mediation. And so we sat down and we talked. She and a manager, and she told her story about what has been happening and her problems. And he had been through a mediation training, so he understood not to sit there and deny and deny and deny. And so when we talked about what it was she was looking for, and she said some things in the session that she had been going to school on her own to try to get a better life, and she was a single parent and things of that nature. And she really wanted to move on. And so, and the manager had said to her, well, we have these programs. Perhaps we can help you be detailed to various places, and perhaps we can help pay for your education. And she stopped dead in her tracks. And she ended the mediation, and she walked out. And I think because she got to see that possibly she could get what she wanted, but she had this other track going on at the same time where she was going to go join the class action and try to get a winner and a loser. Well, in about a week, I get a call saying that she wanted to come back and mediation, but somebody higher up in the organization wouldn't let her come back. So I had to get on the phone and go up the chain. She came back, and we talked about it. We got a resolution. She got the thing she wanted about going to school and the details. And
but why wouldn't she have known about those things sooner? It's my sense often that people aren't told that these things aren't available or are available to them until they do something dramatic like what she did.
That may have been. I don't know why she didn't know. I know for a fact that they do have these programs, and why she didn't know, I'm not certain. But he definitely put it on the table and said that they were going to offer it to her.
On a personal level, it's been my experience that sometimes people argue over something when it's really something else
that's
bothering them.
That happens a lot.
So how do you disentangle that? That's more like the problem for a psychologist, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of mediation intersects with a lot of different disciplines. I mean, you've got psychologists, you got law, there's sociology. There's a lot of different intersects here. And basically, the key is to get the person to talk about what it is. They come in with that. But you need to allow them to go deeper. And this is a problem with the mediator who does not understand this process. Because if you just deal with the issue they bring in and try to resolve it at that level, you're not going to get to that underlying piece. And so the key is to have them tell the story and to listen to those kernels that come out. And that's really what it's about. And if you're a good listener, then you put that on the table. And then they talk about that, and that kind of resolve it, and the issue that they brought in wasn't really the issue in the first place.
You've worked in a wide variety of institutions, the Department of Labor, the Federal Labor Relations Authority, the National Treasury Employees Union, the National Football League Players Association. Which of those places were the most challenging?
Wow.
I mean, my bet would be the Football Players Association, just because we're talking about such big money and huge egos.
Well, for me, that was the most interesting because that was early on in my career. It straddled law school when I went back to law school and came out. It was more challenging for the folks who had more experience because I wasn't the first line guy there, but it was exciting for me just to be there and do the behind the scene. At that time, I was doing the behind the scene works, doing the research for the folks who were doing the actual negotiations. So personally, I can't say that.
Now, sometimes we hear that a mediation was requested by one side of a dispute, the other side refuses
right
to mediate. How do you deal with that? Both sides have to agree, right? And then they have to agree to abide by the mediator's decision, whatever it is, even if they think it's a terrible decision?
Yeah, mediators don't make a decision. That's the first thing. Arbitrators and judges make decisions. Mediators don't.
They just try to find a place where you can meet?
Find a place where they can meet and have a discussion to resolve whatever issues that they bring forward. The first part of your question, you want to repeat?
Well, sometimes people will hear that one side of a dispute wants to mediate, and the other side says, no,
we... I wanted to the reason I want to be specific on that, typically you need both parties to come. It's a voluntary process. What happened more recently is this thing called mandatory mediation, where if one side says they're going, the other side must come. That happens a lot in EEO disputes, particularly in federal agencies.
So what happens when one side remains intractable?
You don't get a resolution. But what the research shows, though, when there's mandatory mediation, the success rate is still close to 50%, which is amazing when you have one party who really doesn't want to go, but both parties show up.
One of our past guests who was here to talk about how to resolve issues said that a key was to be sure to let the other person know you understand where they're coming from. And that you don't just accuse them. So that's part of it, too. You have to let both sides understand that you understand why they feel the way they do.
Right. the mediator typically shouldn't be accusing. I think it's trying to get both parties to have an understanding of the other party's perspective. Once that happens, then you're more likely to get a resolution.
Who's going to be at the conference later today? By the way, we're pleased that at this radio station that Bob Henley from our news department will be moderating a panel discussion.
Yeah, I'm not certain since I'm from out of town, but mostly there's mediators and dispute resolution types, people that are there.
You compare notes?
Mostly in between the sessions. Obviously in the sessions you're listening and try to get knowledge, but in between sessions there's networking and things of that going on.
Are there certain people it's harder to mediate with? I would assume that younger people might be tougher to mediate with than older, more mellow folks like me.
Not necessarily so, because
older
you've
people can be stubborn.
Because you've mellowed, it might be a little bit easier to deal with you. I think the energy of the young folks, but what's going on now, people are being trained at an earlier age, and you get another young person to mediate that dispute. And that makes it a lot easier.
Uh-huh. So are you giving a speech today?
I am going to be interviewed this afternoon about dispute resolution, about diversity, some of the things we talked about today.
Dr. Marvin Johnson is the founder and executive director of the Center for Alternative Dispute Resolution, and he's among the people participating in a conference of the Association for Conflict Resolution. How many members?
At the national level, there's thousands. I want to say about 6,000, 7,000.
Really, that many?
Local level, I don't know the specific number of the chapter here. I would suspect it's somewhere in the hundreds, maybe 200, 300, 400, 500.
Which suggests there are a lot of disputes out there to be
resolved.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you for having me.